Welcome to the Fit Identity Podcast. I'm Mike Karpenko, your host. I talk everything think, eat, and move because I want to be able to help you on your quest and journey to be the healthiest version of yourself with your own fit identity. I want to be able to have a place that I can give you plans, systems, nuggets, talk, have conversation, give you my experience over the last almost 30 years in wellness industry so that you can be a better version of yourself. It is Men's Health Month, and we're going to talk about the think portion of Think, Eat, and Move and Fit Identity today. We're going to talk about men's health. This is my very first re-recorded episode because I think it requires depth. I think it requires experience. I think it requires more attention than what I gave it. I was a little erratic in the last one that I did. And I wanted to do something better that was more about you. And the first two things that came to mind when I re-listened to the podcast were, you got to take more ownership, Mike, and you've got to talk a little bit more about your mother's role and the impact that she had on my life. And I felt that those two things for you guys needed to be a much better environment. So I'm going to re-record the episode, and here it is. You guys get to hear it. First and foremost, let me say this quickly. I'm not a doctor. I'm not in clinical trials. I am not experienced in therapy. And if you do need the help, please seek it. Just ask for it. Start opening doors. Reach out to me. Maybe I can point you in the right direction. I can't cure you. I can't fix you. It's not my expertise, nor do I have the credentials to do it. But I certainly would love to be that catalyst that, you know, points you in the right direction to help you out. So please don't mistake me for that person. I'm just a person with a lot of time and experience and, you know, just some knowledge and stories. I think that I've got some great stories that maybe you can see yourself in that will eventually help you. So today I want to talk about, you know, my own personal journey, and I want to, you know, just kind of take you through that. I'm going to talk about poker. I'm going to talk about cards. You know, that's going to be one of the things that a girl that I was dating changed my life with, a simple statement and a series of questions, and I never thought it was, but it was one of the biggest aha moments that I've had in my life, and I want to be able to share that with you. But in order to do that, I want to talk to you guys really about my childhood, how it really created my habits and patterns of who I am. And again, I am not looking for empathy or sympathy or to point blame on anybody. I am literally just kind of giving you a overview of the way that I grew up, and I'm cool with it. I am okay with my past, and I have, you know, I'm just good. I'm just in a good place, and I wanted to be able to share portions of it, not all of it. I feel that part of my life is personal and needs to be kept private, but I wanted to be able to share that and talk about how my past pushed me into, not pushed me, created, you know, me. And I created myself. Let's back that up. Ownership. I created myself out of my past, and it's where I became self-reliant, and I wouldn't want to say focused, but I became self-sufficient. I think that's the best way of looking at it. And in order for you guys to understand that and possibly see that maybe some of the things we share are in common, I'm going to tell some of the stories that I have that brought me up to this point, you know, to where I am today. All of this is a culmination of Men's Health Month, as well as I'm getting back into hiking. And anybody who's self-reliant, anybody who is self-sufficient, they're thinkers. And part of thinking happens when you spend time alone because you're not talking with other people. And I happen to be hiking, again, taking it up, and I am hiking the trail that I had ankle surgery on. For those of you who don't know, ankle surgery came for me in 2020, trail running. I snapped a tendon and tore some cartilage, and I needed to have two procedures, one surgery, and it threw me into a place that was a rocky road. It was a struggle. And returning back to that hike was definitely something I needed to overcome. It was something hard that I wanted to do. And hiking and doing hard things is where I'm pushing myself into at this stage. And I think that if you had an injury, I'm just going to give you your props. I'm going to give you a pound out, a high five. And if you haven't started your road back to, you know, getting back to where you once were or getting, you know, going forward, here's your sign. You can do it. I did it. I went through ups and downs physically, emotionally, you name it. I probably dealt with it. And I probably had the same emotions that you guys did. I gained a terrible amount of weight for me. I never thought that I would return back to normal. I never thought that I'd be able to run again. I questioned a lot of my self-value. And during that process, too, I was self-reliant. I mean, I'm not married. I have no kids. I've never been divorced. I call myself Mayweather, 54-0. Not sure that that's a proud belt to own, but that's what I used to say. And during that injury, it was another point in my life that reassured me that I'm self-reliant and self-sufficient. So I started hiking again, and in the process of hiking, being a deep thinker, rabbit holes when you think it's just going to be awesome and you're going to have this cool playlist and you'll be able to see all, you know, the wonderful things of California. I live right at the beach and I live a mile away from the mountains, which means I can do both things at once all the time. And it is a incredible experience. And I started hiking again. Like, I went back out, and part of that process was just being reflective and thinking for 70 plus minutes on a hill, you know, where I'm all over the place and worried about whether my ankle's going to hold up and, you know, what's it going to be like? And just all the thoughts of entering back into challenge. And I'm sure you've been there, you know, that you're like, I'm going to start a fitness program. I'm going to start a nutrition plan, or I'm going to start something. And we all have that scared moment where we're like, am I going to fail at this? Is this too much for me? Am I biting off more than I can chew? Am I going to be able to do it? Am I going to do it right? Are people going to laugh at me? Like, all the feelings, like, I'm hiking, I'm going. So I jumped right in, and I had the feels, and I started to think. And some of the things that came up into my mind were, you know, just reflective that I am a self-sufficient, self-reliant person. And that's how I got to be 54 and who I am, single, right? Like, living my life. I used to hike these trails with my friends. I used to hike when I was a kid. And it just kind of got me being really reflective of who I am and the struggles that I have. And I wanted to be able to share that with you guys in hopes that you can begin to understand where you're at or see bits and pieces of where you're at inside my story, so that you can begin to become aware or understand yourself and then be able to be a healthier version of yourself. So in order for me to kind of talk about it, you know, about like how I became self-sufficient and how mental health, some people that struggle with mental health are those that are self-sufficient and take it all in and they don't worry or burden anybody else. I need to help you understand like the way that I grew up. First and foremost, like I said, I didn't give my mother enough of a description in the first podcast. So here it's going to go. My mom. So my mom and the relationship with my mom and the environment that my mom put out was nothing short of chaotic, hectic, confusing, wild, absent. It was erratic, and it was eventually found out well after I had left the house and grown up that it was also about mental health. My mom has some mental health issues that she continues to battle with, and she was battling with, but at the time, because she was battling them, and those were only some of the issues, okay? It made an environment in the house very difficult to be cohesive, and as well as there was adultery, there was just nuts stuff. Like, I, not to get down the road, but just keep checking the boxes, right? And that was my mom. She grew up in a household too, where she was raised by her grandmother. So she battled a lot of things herself on top of the things that she didn't have control of. And that created, you know, a household that just didn't gel well together. My dad, The guy's amazing. I mean, I don't know what more to say. He loved us the way that he knew how, and he still continues to love us the way that he knows how. He supplied all the traditional things that you would think of somebody of that age generation to do. Food, shelter, finances, stability, consistency, words of advice. He's amazing. Like, he is a great, incredibly tough, quiet man who tends to stay away from people. Maybe that's partially where I get it at times. But he was an amazing person who took a lot on the chin and didn't really complain about anything. And I could think of 100 things that he should have stood up for in any of the marriages that he was in with my mom. Just situations. He was just an incredible human being. He grew up in a tough household. His father was a drinker and a smoker. And my grandfather, he passed away when I was born. Like, within weeks of me being born, my grandfather had passed away. And my dad had to be self-sufficient. He had to take on a lot to himself. But during that process of my dad growing up, and right before he left for the Navy, he got into a fist fight with my grandfather. And that process sent him into the Navy because he was like, I'm done, I'm walking away. And he became self-sufficient there. And he went into the Navy. It's why I support the Navy. Go Navy. I'm all for it. It's why I became a Cowboys fan. Roger Staubach, Navy. I am a Navy guy, so I didn't go to, I was not in the military. I'm going to be clear with that. But my dad came home, and then you can see he went to work, and he needed a job, and that job was Eastman Kodak, and he got on a bus for 2 hours in each direction, 4 hours total, and worked in a factory just to have a job, to pay the bills. He knew what he had to do. He was self-reliant, and he needed money. He needed to be able to do, and that's how he met my mom, on a bus. I don't really know the story other than that. And then they ended up getting married. And I do believe in my heart, and I don't know the story, but this would be me filling in a gap, I think they got married out of filling voids and not out of love. I just don't think that's what happened. I think that they were two people struggling in their own ways, in their own times. And, you know, when they crossed paths, I think it just fit. And it's probably one of the other reasons I never got married. I never wanted something to just fit. You know, I always looked for something that was good. However, I was self-reliant. Just on myself. I have two brothers. And those two brothers are incredible human beings. The younger one is a physician who, he's tough, man. He's got a tough exterior. He's a person that, you know, went through lots of school and has a chip on his shoulder a little bit of an ego, you know, but he's an incredible human being, extremely smart, extremely giving as well. That's one of the reasons he went into the thought process or the career of being a physician, because he likes to give back. And married, he's got kids. I have an older brother who is extremely smart, well thought out, completely self-sufficient. You're talking about a system, plan-based guy. And in our household, it was not cohesive. We weren't best friends. We were, like I said, survival of the fittest. And we kind of did our own thing because we were just a little bit different in age. My brother older is 18 months older than me. My younger is 5 years younger than me. Two different sets of friends, two different sets of survival, three actually, right? And it was just kind of like summer camp all the time. We were like a house of people. Five people that were doing different things all at the same time. It was never on the same page. We were not supporting each other in any way, shape, or form. And us as brothers, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have all this experience and knowledge that kids have these days. We were just unaware of how to support each other and if we should support each other. We had TV to teach us those things, but we just didn't know. I'm very blessed that we didn't have a daughter, a girl in our family. I wish we would have. I mean, part of me wanted one, and I wish I would have always had a sister. Like, I really wanted one. But I'm also glad that we didn't, because the challenges and the hurdles that we had to overcome as kids, I don't know that I would have wanted to watch a girl go through that process and fail like we did miserably and have to go through that pain that we did just because of the environment. Not because I'm blaming, but because of the environment, I wouldn't want her to have done that. So the strong female person in my life was my grandmother. She is a matriarch. You want to talk about a saint? She lived until she was like 93, 94 years old. A saint. Like, my grandmother is the best woman I've ever met in my life. And no one's probably going to live up to that. I'm sorry, but we all know grandparents, they win. But that is kind of the situation that I grew up in as far as how I became somewhat self-reliant because of that first initial stage. And obviously in that process, there were stints of, for me, not understanding value, not understanding cohesive relationships, taking a lot on myself, and, you know, just being myself, which is very reflective of how you might think a male deals with a lot of things right now. They're very quiet. They're very reflective. They don't say much. They take on the burden. They don't want you to take it on. And then they implode, right? And I probably had moments of implosion as a child doing, you know, kind of dumb things. But we lived in a couple different houses. And as I lived in a couple houses, you know, I wasn't really able to create friends that, you know, that stuck and stayed. My dad was cool. I had a soccer field growing up, and it was the one house I wish we never would have moved out of because all the kids there played sports. All of us did. It was wild. And then my mom wanted to move, and we moved into this new house, and that new house had 300 acres and had neighbors, but these kids, and I don't have anything against them, but they didn't do the things that my last neighborhood did. They didn't play sports. They were very much into cars. They were into music. And then eventually they were more into smoking and drinking and doing things that I just, at that time, I wasn't really in any of that. Like, I was just like, I just need to play sports. That's all I ever wanted to do. Because as I played sports, it gave me value. And that value allowed me to have friends because I was like, oh, cool. Like, I would have these things, you know, or I would have these the people, friends, kids that would be like, oh, it's cool. It's Mike. Pick him first. He's always wins and he has the soccer field and that's all he does is play sports. So I moved into this other house, and which was a big change for me. And I was already, you know, I was playing sports. That's all. It was a big change. There wasn't any problems up until like 9 or 10, I think. A couple. My mom, going back to her, a big shout out. I will say this. Let me just back up on my mom. My mom was the first person who got me involved in the health, which I didn't even realize was her doing until later in life, is that she put me on a diet. It's called the Feinstein or the Feingold diet. And it was about sugar and understanding processed foods. And it was understanding inflammation and hyperactivity and, you know, all the chemicals that are in food, red dye, BHP, BHB, BPAs, all that stuff. I knew about that as a kid. I didn't have sugar cereals. I didn't have anything all the cool kids had. And we were not a financially successful family when I was a kid. Like, we went through a part like we're going through now, inflation, and there was just a place that was called cookies and chips and cups and napkins. There was no branding to them. It was all in black and yellow packaging, and it was just like, here it is, and it was very inexpensive. We bought that stuff, and I watched my mom bounce checks at the grocery store. So, I mean, I grew up in that way. I grew up, you know, stressed about my value, my worth, who I am, what I do. I always felt that I was being judged. And then my parents got divorced. And that was another internal self-surviving mechanism that I had to do because nobody was divorced. Nobody had parents that didn't come, you know, to school with both of them and a nurturing mom and a strong dad. Like, my parents worked. They worked. My dad worked trick work. And, you know, my mom was absentee. And when she was present, it was messy. So, and when I moved, here is where I taught myself to even be more self-reliant and internal. They took me out of public school and they put me into private school. It was Catholic private school. And I got taken away from all my friends again. And I got put into this private school. And this private school, these kids had already been there for years and they knew all each other. I was the new kid. And the only reason I survived was sports. He's good at sports. He's good at sports. He's not good at friendship, but he's good at sports. And I was in this new place, but then I had to give up my old friends. But then when I came home, I had to play. I played with public school kids, but went to school with private school. So I was like from environment to environment, which was tough for me. But then I start to look, hey, I operate well when I get in and out of environments now, because I think, you know, I had this constant interaction of, hey, I can go in and out of wherever I'm at and somehow be okay. So in that process of moving and not having a lot of money, like I said, I got a nickname. That nickname was Chex, C-H-E-X. And that nickname came because, again, I got a lot of hand-me-downs. We didn't have a lot of money to go clothes shopping, school shopping, and whatnot. And the pair of pants that fit me that were not floods, which were short, right? And these days, people can wear shorter pants and be cool. But back then, if you had short pants, they would tell you that you had floods. And my parents, they would shop at Sears. And that was where we could afford clothes. And I had a brand that was called Tough Skins with a rubber patch. And all the other kids had Levi's, which were the cool thing. Corduroys, jeans. And that pair of pants was checkered that fit me. That was the only pair of pants that fit me. And I thought that I could hide the floods with checkered pants. But what happened was I didn't hide that I was wearing checkered pants. And the people in my neighborhood, the kids, they would call me Chex. And they called me Checkers and Chex. And it was not a term of endearment. It was a term of mock. And that term of mock made me understand that it sent the message that, people didn't want to hang out with me. They didn't think I was cool, you know. And it bothered me. So it caused me to withdraw, and it caused me to just hang out because I was never anybody's first phone call. And I played sports still. So all I did was shoot baskets and you know, like play soccer. We had a swing set, and I took all the swings out of it, and I made a soccer goal out of it. And I literally played sports morning, noon, and night, to the point where my neighbors were like, hey, can you go to bed? Because we work in the morning, and you're out here at midnight playing basketball, shooting foul shots. And that's where I learned consistency, and that's where I learned to walk away from problems. I'm very good. I used to be really good at walking away from things that bother me. Like my parents were going through this divorce, and what would I do? Go outside, just play as much sports as I possibly can. And I will say this to you, that if get your kids involved in sports, I'm going to tell two stories about kids and how this can really help your kids. So if you want your kids to listen to this, I'll make this so that it's very digestible for kids. Sports saved my life, literally. Because without it, I would have never learned the concept of winning and losing. I would have never learned competition. I would have never had a place to, I think the first word is hide, but the second is accelerate. And then the other thing is it taught me teamwork. And it taught me that although I can excel on my own, that I needed other people. And I needed a way to figure out how to motivate, inspire, impact, make better people in sports. And I really appreciated that because I wasn't getting it at home with my brothers, only because I didn't know anything about it. And team sports and sports for me were my dying grace, I guess. I don't know if that's the right terms, but they really truly were a place of hibernation and acceleration for me. So I appreciate sports, love them all. And then the other thing was, this will be for the kids too, is that I was asked to give advice to two boys that, you know, they're the sons of my friends. And we were telling all the fun stories that I've had in the past and in my life. And I've lived quite a life. I've traveled all over the place. I've lived in New York City. I've lived in South Florida. I've lived here. I've worked with celebrities and athletes and, you know, done a lot of really cool things, or what people would think are cool things. I don't necessarily, I look back on it for myself and be like, yeah, it was so cool, but it was fun. So they asked me to give them advice, you know, and I also have dated a lot of girls, and I'm not proud of that either. I used to wear that as a belt, but it's not really the greatest thing. So they asked me to give advice. Kids, here it is. when they asked me, they had said, what would you say to them? And I looked at both of them and I said, here, can you guys just promise me one thing? That as you go through life, you'll understand that the two of you are your best friends. That the world revolves around the two of you. That you're not going to get another brother. That you're not going to get another person that's quite like that. And it's your job to make him better. And it's your job to make him better. It's your job to support him. And it's your job to support him. You should be their first pick. You should be his, and you should be his first pick. And that no matter what, you guys have to have this unconditional devotion to each other and want to have each other excel, and more than you want anybody else to excel. If you do that, you will have single-handedly one of the greatest gifts you will have ever been able to give yourself. But you're going to be tempted. You're going to want different best friends, cooler people, people that have other things, or people that are maybe better in a sport. You're going to be pulled to that. And certainly, I understand, you'll get into testosterone, and you'll get into, you know, like these hormone changes and age changes. I go, just stay rooted there. Stay rooted in your brother. Like, just understand that your brother is your performance enhancing drug. And I'm sorry to call a child a drug, but that's what it is. So if you do that at age 40, I go, you're going to look back and go, this was the single greatest decision I ever made. And you'll pass that on for legacy. And, you know, they both kind of looked at me probably like, whatever, old man. But that was the advice that I ended up giving. So moving on, moving through that with the checks thing and, you know, and understanding that, you know, I had a nickname and I got mocked for it. And yeah, that went all the way through college. But still, all those things made me self-reliant and quiet and taught me patterning to be like, all right. Like, I can survive just about anything. And, you know, in high school, because, again, private school friends at school, which I didn't feel like I fit in because I didn't have a lot of finances, but I was good in sports, and people didn't gravitate to me because I probably wasn't good at making friends or being a friend, because I wasn't good at relationships because I just didn't learn them in the house. And that's not a bad thing. It just is the thing. And I weaponized, you know, sports and being good at them in order to get friends. And then I would come home and, you know, these guys that I was friends with at home, you know, already knew who I was. And yeah, I would try to be cool with them, but they were cool with each other during school. So I was an afterthought with them as well. So I was constantly in this internal thought process with myself, which I think a lot of men can relate to, that they can be in internal thought processes to become self-reliant and just deal with whatever they're dealing with on their own. Patternized, learning this over and over and over and seeing things that come up, whether I had an erratic mom, you know, my dad wasn't home. I never thought there were bad things, but I just didn't talk about them because I thought I'd be judged for them, or I didn't know how to talk about them, or I didn't even know that they were even things that needed to be talked about. I just kept to myself because that's it. And the only thing I talked about was sports. So in high school, because I wanted to be able to hang out with the public school kids in the summer and after school, you know, I think I would be a little energetic, and I think that I would really push for people to want to like me rather than just be me. And that push obviously can create friction and energy and just, it can be hypey, right? And when you get somebody that's around you that's hypey, you know, there's a pushback, especially when you're kids. And part of my pushback was the public school, my neighborhood kids, they grounded me. They secretly, like, they got together and they started talking and they're like, yeah, checks, you know, he's just so this way and he's that way and he's this way. And they literally grounded me to a point where they would put the car in neutral and let it go down the driveway so that I wouldn't hear their car come up, or they would park down the street so they didn't know that their car was coming, or they would, you know, let the car go down the street and then they would leave so that I couldn't hang out. I was grounded, and they laughed about it for quite a bit. I forgive, but I don't forget. Let me just say that. Like, I got grounded. because of my inability to foster good friendships and to be self-reliant. Because I wanted friends and I didn't know how to form friends. And so I internalized that. It's not like, I kept that to myself. Like, what was I supposed to do? Go to my dad and be like, they grounded me. Go to my private school friends. They grounded me. Well, why did they ground you? Because I'm a loser. Like that's the whole thing. And I think that as guys and as dudes, we go through this process of internalizing because we evaluate self-worth. And that is one of the things that becomes very difficult in our lives that we don't get taught. And in my household, I knew winning and I knew losing. And I think most men know winning and they know losing. And that's the way they feel. Or even if you're a female, you know that you're winning or that you're losing. But the numbness, the in-between, is when people don't understand. They don't know how to live life in between winning and losing. And that was one of my biggest hurdles, was as self-sufficient as I was, and as much as I thought I knew about everything, there was a lot of in-between, more than there was winning and losing. And not knowing that in-between, as I got older, it got harder. And it's easy when you're 21 not to know the in-between, because there's a lot of time in front of you and you're always doing something new. But as you get older, the in-between becomes harder, especially if you're married and you have kids, or you're into a longer term relationship, or, you know, you're into longer friendships. The in-between, not knowing, is very, very difficult, because all you're thinking about is, I either just failed or I'm winning. And then when you're in between, you're super numb. And that's where, if you're in that stage, I really value like getting help, or I really think that you should consider the source. Again, you're not broken. You don't have problems. It's not an issue. But get to the source of how you're feeling and why you're feeling that way, so you can understand yourself, or you can understand your husband, your partner, your boyfriend, whatever it may be. But understanding the support source means that you can support rather than fix. Because nobody wants to be fixed unless they ask you to say, hey, can you fix this for me? And that's a tough place to get to when somebody is self-reliant. Somebody who is taught to take it on themselves and to deal with it. They don't ask for help and they don't accept help well. But to be supported and to feel like a priority, they thrive in that area. And that, to me, I think that if you're going through this, or going, not this, but if you're going through whatever it is you're going through, I'm imagining that you know the ends of the spectrum. I'm either losing or I'm winning. And something could make you feel like a loser immediately, or someone can make you feel like you're a champion immediately. And the in-between is the biggest struggle. And that's where most of the time is, in the in-between. So get help, ask for help, start to get to the source, try to understand that, and really just make an effort. You're not broken. So getting on with, you know, like getting to where I am, is like, sports created my consistency. Sports created my ability to focus. My chaotic family life made me self-reliant. All these things are like compact inward. And I hiked a lot as a kid too. Let me back up on that. In order to escape divorce, an ugly household, a tough household, not ugly, a tough household, I hiked. And that hike was because I was never asked to do things, and because I wasn't in a position that fostered great friendship so that people would ask me. So I don't point the blame towards them. I didn't do well as a friend, maybe, right? Like, I'm okay with that. Like, I didn't do well in the friendship skills to be somebody that somebody would call first, you know. But if it was a sports game, call Mike. So I would hike into our backwoods, where there were, you know, everything you could think: wooded acres, ponds, creeks, wooded areas, tree forts, shotguns. You name it. There were even railroad tracks that were all the way out that we would hike to. But I would hike alone, because I knew that was a time killer. that time killer would allow me to just go and pick up shotgun shells, and I always tried to get to, you know, whatever color I could do. But I knew instead of sitting around the house or playing sports, the one thing I could do is go on this hike, and this is how long it would take, and by the time I got back, it would be dinner time. So I'd be able to pass this time hiking and just be by myself. I was like, I'll solve it. People don't want to hang out with me, I'll solve it. I'll go for a hike, which is why hiking kind of brought all of this back on me. And I think it's great during Men's Health that it brought it back so that I could be a voice to tell stories that maybe you guys can relate to, whether you are male or female. So that was that. And then I went into college, and, you know, that was just a mess. I had no ability, no systems, no nothing. And, you know, I repeated all my behaviors, you know, at the end of high school and into college. I sought validation even more so. Got to be a bigger adult. You know, I had a issue with not telling the truth and making things bigger than what they were, expanding on situations because I wanted people to like me, and then under-delivering. That was me. Like I was just this person of like, I want to be liked. I want friends. But then I could never deliver. And, you know, I wasn't a good person. I really wasn't. But I was just struggling with where I was at. And that was the way I was trying to find to be validated and have value. Like, oh, people like me, I've got value. I've got friends. And still, wasn't the first person picked. I wasn't any, you know, like I really struggled with being anyone's best friend. I was always there, and I've always said this. If any of my friends ever call me, I'm the first one out the door. I have a shovel. I have the bag of all the things that we need. I have turned off my phone. You can't find me. I'm out the door before they finish their statement. Someone says, I finish. What do you need? That's all. What do you need? I'm that guy. I am so loyal because I just value it. I just never had loyalty in my life. So I value and give what I hope to get in return. And I quickly learned that, not quickly, but later in life, I learned that although I value loyalty and trust and friendship and all these high-level characteristics and value, unfortunately, that if you struggle like I do and I have in the past, and you're hoping to get it from an external point. So if you're internally struggling and you're hoping to get it from an external place, that's the issue, right? And I was always hoping that I could get this external when I needed it internal, like in my, whether it's inside me or inside my house. I wanted trust. I wanted loyalty. I wanted unconditionalness. That's what's given inside the house. You learn that. That's the highest level that you can get. You can't get it from a friend because a friend might be in a relationship with a great woman or have family and have other things that you don't have. They're getting it there. So when they show up for other things, their cup is full and they're ready to do things on a different level than you are because they're like, I'm cool. And you're sitting there saying, but I want a deeper conversation with you. And I just want a friend. I want a best friend. And they're like, yeah, my best friends are at home. My best friend's my brother. My best friend's this. But yeah, let's have some fun. And you're just like, it doesn't align. And it doesn't align not because of who you are and your self-worth. It doesn't align because of what you went through. And I'm going to talk about this, which is a big thing for me. Like, I left home, because I didn't do well in college. I got a job. I did all these things. And then I went back to school, graduated, moved to Florida. My move to Florida, I drove down to Florida by myself in a Jeep. And I moved to Florida to help a friend. And I've always been, hey, if I help you, then that's me showing my value. But what I have to be careful of, and anybody who shows value by helping other people, what you have to be careful of is becoming bitter and angry because of reciprocity. That's where you do something with the expectation that you're going to get something back. And I had to be careful because at stages in my life, I would expect reciprocity. Now I don't. Now I just love doing things because I want people to be as, you know, as I want them to have all the things that I have. Like when I do giveaways and whatnot, I used to be like, hey, I'll give away a pair of shoes. I give away three pairs of shoes. If I see somebody who needs a pair of shoes, sneakers for the gym, I do it. You know, I always want somebody to have what I have because I know what it's like not to have. I know what it's like to look at the haves and be a have not and be like, and I know what it's like to go, because I have, I can. And there's no reason I shouldn't. And I want you to not have that feeling. And I would just do it. It's just who I am. I would give away free training sessions. I would, you know, everything I do is just free. Like it's sometimes. Sometimes I'm like, everyone's like, you should charge more. And I'm like, I know, but I don't know if they can afford it. And I don't know what they can afford. And I don't that want them ever not to have or have to be me when I was a kid. And that's why I do those things that I do. So I moved on to Florida by myself, and I moved to help a friend that was going through a divorce. It was tough on him. And, you know, there are very few instances and times that I was helped out in my life. He definitely helped me sleep on a couch, pay for lunches and dinners and do those kind of things. I helped him through an awful divorce that was ugly. But I moved there for him. I never wanted to move to Florida, never. And through that process, I ended up moving to California. I drove across country in California. I'm going to tell that story one day. But basically, I drove across country in the same Jeep with no top, left the top in Florida, and all my possessions with $400, saw hail, rain, winds, tornado in Texas, and showed up in California, one of the hottest days ever. So I've been through it all by myself, kind of being self-reliant, which is what a lot of guys do. They go through all the tornadoes, the hail, all the things. And it's all because of the source, you know, and it's not blaming. Oh, it's not my dad. It's not my mom. You know, it's just the source of what was happening. And that source is going to come full circle right here in about 3 minutes. So I literally moved to California. And when I moved to California, I had one girl put me in my place. Shout out. I'm not going to give her a name, but MP, shout out, put me in my place, and I'm forever thankful for her. She said, until you fix what you have going on with your mom, the chip on your shoulder, and you thinking that you know what you need to be able to do, and the resentment and the anger that you have, you're not going to be happy in life. So find your mother, because I really don't talk to my mom, and I haven't talked to her, you know, only a handful of times since I left New York. That's a vital piece that you guys need to understand. I didn't talk to my mom. I've only talked to my mom like three times from 20 until now. That's it. One of those times was when I moved to California and I had my card pulled by a girl that was like, hey man, just get your shit together. And I was like, all right, I'm gonna call her. So I called, did the do, very appreciative that I was able to, you know, face some of the things that I needed to face. Again, resilient. Nobody else was going to face it for me. Nobody else was going to fix it for me. I'll take it on. I don't need to talk about it. Didn't tell anybody that's what I was dealing with. I did it all on my own. Didn't tell my friends that I was talking to my mom for the first time. And then I only did it once, but I didn't talk to anybody about it. Took it all in. And then I was dating another girl, and this girl was going to be a child psychologist, and I was telling her the story of, you know, my mom. And generally what I hear when I tell the story, the full story, I get a response of, oh, I can't believe that happened. I feel so bad for you. I'm sympathetic to your situation. And I don't know what kind of mom could ever do that. And that's not what she did. And this is 43 minutes in, and I apologize it takes this long, but I was just hoping to build to this point. She looks at me after I tell her, and her first words out of her mouth were, shout out JN, those are her initials, says to me, so you had a bad mom. That was it. I was like, what? She goes, yeah, you had a bad mom. I get it. I was like, what? You don't have anything else to say on that? And she said, no, really, I don't. She goes, you had a bad mom. Those were the cards you were dealt. And that statement right there changed so much in my life. She said, those were the cards that you were dealt. And I said, what do you mean by that? She goes, you ever play poker? And I said, well, I'm not really good at it, but I gambled. I played, you know, cards, Uno. She goes, fine, Uno, cards, whatever games that you play with dice. She goes, why are you worrying about one hand that you played in your life? Like, you are dwelling on one hand and you're not even telling me what the dealer has. I don't even know, but you're so consumed, angry, resentful. Like, why? She goes, why aren't you playing more? Why aren't you getting new cards that end up? You're going to get more hands in life, but you're not going to get any more hands in life if you stick and just play only one hand and become resentful. She goes, you got bad cards. You're okay, Mike. We've all had bad cards. We've all gotten threes, sevens, nines against the dealer's 21. She was like, we all have had it. You're not that different. The dealer dealt them. And it's not even the dealer's fault. They don't own the cards. Why are you so upset? And I just started to think to myself, like, wow. My whole entire life, I was mad about one set of cards, one hand. And she goes, Mike, if we played cards last night or if we played the board game and you rolled the dice, would you remember every roll that you did? And I'm like, no. She goes, why are you remembering this one? I'm like, well, it's so big. And she goes, no, it's not. It's not. And you're internalizing all of this. Rather than looking at the wins, you're looking at the losses. And she goes, and I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'm saying you got to play more. And if you don't play more cards, you don't win more. And the only way, when you do play more, you get more opportunity. And more opportunity means you're going to win more and you're going to be happier. And right now, you haven't been playing much at all, if at all. Changed my life. Literally turned me upside down. And it made me think that it's okay. And that I was judging myself on a hand that nobody even knew I was dealt. That nobody remembered my hand. Nobody understood my hand. Nobody even cared about that hand. And nor did I. I cared about one hand that didn't matter when I had all these other hands that I needed to play. So if you're sitting there and you're trying to figure out this in-between stage, and like we talked about, you know, you're feeling like you're only winning and losing and there's no in-between, it's because you're only playing those two hands. And you're not thinking about all the other hands that got played in between. And it's difficult, and maybe you're not playing those hands, and maybe you need to talk to somebody or anybody, family, friend, brother, sister, dad, therapist. Maybe you need to talk to somebody about playing more hands. But it isn't going to get fixed continuously having only that one hand that it got played. Newsflash, the hand got played whether you handed the card backs or not. And that to me was a big piece to helping me manage a lot of the things that are in my life. Like I was like, okay, life changed from that point on. And I started to realize that I needed to be a better person. I started to realize that I wasn't playing enough hands. I mean, it took a lot of work. Don't get me wrong. I went to therapy during that time, and I knew enough to get into therapy. I knew enough to get out of therapy. I knew enough, you know, to use it as a tool. And not as a crutch. I think that was a very big thing, was not to do that. And as I look back and as I've gotten older, you know, the things that I had to understand is this world of living in reciprocity and thinking that I've got to do things in order for people to like me rather than just be me and not worry about the rest of the world. That's what really, when the people say, oh, don't worry about what other people think, just put your head down, be yourself. That's really what they're talking about. They're really talking about going off and being your own self, having your own fit identity, and, you know, and doing the thing that you need to do. And not worrying so much in the world of reciprocity and not becoming an overthinker or an overanalyzer and watching indicators that your friends say or do. They can't live up to the expectations that you have. They're your friends. Put friendship on that. And if they're not the best friends, and if they're not your best friends, that's a whole different thing, to get into. But as a person growing up and a person who's got years on me, if I had to give advice to younger people, it would be to understand the cards that you were dealt was just a hand and to move forward. I would also say that make sure that you're thick as thieves with your family. I would also say that, you know, don't worry about the judgment of others. And I know that that's a very cliche and easy thing to do, but they'll pass. Other people will pass in your life, and yet you don't have to worry about that. Don't try to impress people. If you impress them, cool. If you do, don't, okay. Be yourself. And that if you know a loner, if your husband, your boyfriend is somebody that's been able to take all this on, or if you're that person, I'm going to tell you, you probably have these feelings of you don't care because you feel like nobody else does. Or you're looking for exception or rejection. You're looking for indicators. And both of those things are a sign of what you really want is to be somebody's priority. What you really want is somebody's time. If you know a loner, they don't want you to put them first. Let me rephrase that. They don't want to feel as though they're being put first, but they want to be supported unconditional. Because they just get empty. Because they give and they give and they give. And they do it in silence. When things get hard, they don't reach out. They don't communicate. And what they do is they look for reasons that they're either failing or winning, and they're not living in the in-between. And ultimately, loners, they kind of really love people's time. Because it's the one thing, and this is me to a T. I'm going to let you in on a little piece to me. I can have pretty much anything that I want, in general. I mean, I'm not the wealthiest guy in the world, but I do okay. And everyone says, oh, Mike, it's really easy to, you know, or it's really hard to get you a gift. And my response is, I go, I know, it's tough, man. But the reality is, in the back of my mind, when people say that to me, I know that they don't know me. That's the indicator that I look for. Because the truth is, it's not hard to get me what, you know, get me a gift. Because the gift that I want, it's time. I want your time. I want your undivided attention. I want to know that I'm the priority when you choose to hang out with me. I don't want to add more people to the group. I don't want to make it a bigger party than what it is. And if there is a bigger party, I want you to gravitate to me, not to these new people. And I don't think it's wrong that people do that. I'm just telling you the way that I'm geared. And it happened recently in a group where everyone's like, oh, yeah, we should do this and we should make it bigger. And I was like, yeah, no, I don't want to do it. I just value your time so much that I would rather spend it with you guys than spend it with other people. And I know that that's a really different thing. Most people don't have that ability to say it. But when you get to the age that I'm at and you understand the value of time, that's what you say. You really want that instead of things. And I will say that when a giver becomes snipey, gripey, you may see these things and you may see that you're doing it too. So let me give you this piece. If you're self-sufficient, if you're an internalizer, if you are becoming snappy or you are being called selfish all of a sudden or out of character, It's because your bucket's on full. I mean, it's empty. Your bucket's empty. So let me say that again. If you're becoming snappy, if you're becoming moody, if you're looking and being told that you are doing things out of character in some ways, it's because your bucket's empty. And when you reach in, you bounce your hand off the bottom of a plastic bucket and it hurts. And you say to yourself, like, I don't want to do that. I want to do this. And the rest of the group looks at you or somebody looks at you and goes, what? Why you got to be that way? They're very used to you giving. So it might be a sign that you need to get back. You need to receive. So what I say to this is that if you know somebody who's an internalizer, someone that is quiet, these would be the things that I would give you as far as advice. Number one, support them. Number two, they want to be a priority. Make them a priority. Number three, give them your time. Because they only want to spend time with people that really want to spend time with them. They don't want your fake time. They don't want your BS time. They don't want you to be like, well, we should hang out with them. I don't want to not invite them. That they can read the room better than anybody because they've spent an entire life being self-sufficient and looking for indicators where they are either failing or winning. And they also are looking at the indicators of self-worth. It's that simple. You can't beat them at their own game that they have been playing for years and year for a lifetime. You just can't. So you'll think you are just like a 13-year-old boy, you know, thinks that they know more than you at 40. They think. They don't. I'm telling you this straight up. They have watched and watched and watched you do and say the things that you can do, and you can't beat them at their own game. They really just want your real, true time. And if you don't want to give it to them and you're not, then don't. Do them a favor. I'll tell you that. You want to give them a gift, do them a favor and step back. They'll be like, I get it. They'll know it, you know, and they'll understand it. So, I think those are the big things. And then if it's too big and you find yourself really beating yourself up in the in-between, I really wish that you would get some help, that you would reach out, that you would find some help, and that you would just, in the realm of fit identity, think bigger, right? Like, just be like, it's bigger than me and I could use some help. Doesn't make me weak. Doesn't make me a loser. I just need to understand it. I don't need you to fix me. Understand me. Oh, and then what I would say is this. Look for ways to support them, not fix them. Look for ways to understand them. Look for ways to just look at their source and not to point blame. I think that's a really big deal. And then help them feel good about where they're at. I mean, JN, when she said that to me and said, oh, you just got dealt bad cards. Like, it was nothing. Like in one sentence, like, she fixed it all. Oh, you just got dealt bad cards. I get it. You had a bad mom. It's like, who are you? And that alone was just enough that I got, you know, with all the other things that I was dealing with. And looking back, I will say this. I've done some horrible things. I've done some bad things. I have not been well. I have been tough to deal with. I have, you know, I've struggled, but I've always had good intentions. I've never had bad intentions unless you really wronged me. And even then, I don't have bad intentions. I just wait for the opportunity to come at you, to literally come for you. But other than that, like, everything I do, I try to have the best intentions for it. And I always want everyone to succeed. And I always give way more than I have. It's just who I am. Like, I want everybody else to live a way better life than me. That is a true statement. I want everyone to be better than me because I don't think I have it that bad. So, I think that that's a big look into health and mental health and watching, you know, if your husband is a sole provider or, you know, and he's in the traditional role. Again, I'm not saying it's good or bad or whatever is good in your house. I don't really care. All I'm saying is that whatever end of the spectrum that you are on, if they're quiet and they're withdrawn, it's because something internal is going on and, you know, they're either going to fix it internal not fix it internal and they're going to wait for it to implode, or they're going to do something external. And that external could be anything from drinking to alcohol, you know, from alcohol to drugs to, you know, deviant things, gambling, not paying attention, you know, doing the things that are not cohesive to the family or to themselves. So look for that and just look to understand them, you know, and I don't think you need to be empathetic or sympathetic, but understanding and understand the source rather, and don't point the finger. Don't be, oh, it's your dad's fault. Don't do that. I think that, you know, I will say, like, getting back to, you know, the friend thing and this support item that I just mentioned right now. The reason I do say help is a good thing is because it's a third party that has no juice in the game other than payment. Okay. That's their juice. And to help you. You ask a friend or a family, the natural tendency for a friend or a family member is to protect you. Under any circumstances, they're going to side with you. Any. They're like, yeah, I mean, they may have hard conversations with you that are, you know, you don't want to hear, but ultimately they're having the hard conversations that are in your favor to help you in that world. I've been very good at both sides of that. One, I'll do anything for any of my friends at any time, has bitten me almost every time, you know, because just like any breakup, friends break up, however it works, you take their side. Every time that everybody gets back together and you're the odd man out, which will leave you with this question. It's really interesting that as friends, brothers, sisters, whatever we are, that what we will do is in times of trouble or times where we have to not like something, we are the first one up to bat. We're like, let's do this. But when they repair that, we're never the first ones that are like, hey, this is the greatest thing in the world. I can't believe it. You know, like, I knew you'd love, I knew you're in love with them, or I knew this was going to work out, and I knew this is a great thing. We're not those people. We're like, wow, God, I'm a yo-yo. Like, what am I doing? It's a real interesting things with that, you know, when you deal with that, when you pick sides. And I'm not saying you shouldn't pick sides. I'm just saying think about that, anybody that you've ever known that you have picked sides with and then it didn't end up in your favor. And then you end up either being the odd man out or you're testy with your friends over it. You're like, and then say to yourself, why didn't I support her or him in the same way when they didn't like him? I don't get it. Like, or when they're going through their breakup. So all of that comes down into supporting and understanding during men's health. And I thought it was really important because I was hiking and that it was a big deal to me just being reflective on all these years, all this experience, all this failure, all these mess ups, you know. And I don't know that enough people know me because I keep my public life public and my private life somewhat private, just because I like to protect that. I like to keep it in my own world, but I also now feel that this piece of my private life could help some people in today's climate. I think it's important for me to say these things so that somebody out there can get help or can be helped by one of you or supported. Let's not say help. You can support them where they're at and understand them where they're at. And I think that's super incredibly important when you look at it from a big standpoint. And yeah, I think that all of that, and I'm just trying to think if there's anything else that I left out as I look at my notes. And oh, guys, here's the last piece. Life happens in cycles. Okay. It really does. Phases and cycles. We're going to go through a whole bunch of things in our lives. And that is from, you know, we weren't the same person from 13 to 15, 15 to 18, 18 to 21, 21 to 24. Same as we're not 30 to 35, 35 to 40. All these things are going to happen, right? Our job in wellness and in life and with relationships, with stress and with failures is to be in a cycle and understand that, unfortunately, in a cycle, there are other things that are going to not, that are going to suffer. That you're not going to be great at everything during a phase. Some things you will not be as good at. Some things will suffer. Some things will set back or decline. The simple answer would be, hey, I've got a great bank account. Well, while I buy a house and I'm happy about having a house, my bank account might start to suffer. So my finances are going to suffer, but I bought a house. That is like a really easy one to say, that while I concentrate on owning a home and providing stability, I am letting my finances go. Or while I'm concentrating on my health, I am letting my finances go because I'm not working as much. Real easy way of talking about it. But the overall goal is to always understand that whatever phase or cycle that you're in, whatever cards that you're being dealt, is that you're always going to be dealt new cards. And your job is to play the cards out, whether you screw up at the table and people are mad at you for the way that you played your cards, for the system, by the book, whatever it is. But they were your cards to play as you want to be able to play them. And then your job is to figure out what you're going to take forward into the next cycle. What did you learn? What were the patterns? What were the things that you enjoyed doing that are going to make you a better, healthier, fitter you? What's going to make your fit identity as the future comes? So I am over an hour, you guys, but this was a really important subject. And in all fairness, just to let you guys know, this is the third time I've done this podcast over, because it was just really important to me that it was about you, even though I told stories about me. So I appreciate your ear. I appreciate you as always. I hope this helps somebody somewhere. And until we can talk again, stay well, be well. I'll talk to you soon.